What is the key to becoming a vital Presbyterian church today? What does it take to defy the 50-year trend of a declining denomination? Is it a charismatic pastor whom everyone loves? Is it having a style of worship or a wide array of programs that will attract young people? Is it being personally and culturally relevant? Is it holding fast to a conservative past or going boldly into a progressive future? Is it simply being friendly and inviting? Most of us would think most of these things are important, and to some extent, most of them are. But they're not key. They're not the difference makers. They don't shift the playing field. They're not Aaron Rodgers. Had to slip that one in. If a young, dynamic, charismatic pastor gets called to an unhealthy congregation where fear, anxiety, and unresolved issues from the past consume them, chances are that pastor will leave the congregation, maybe even the ministry, before the congregation finds healing. As for programs and worship, we have churches that have tried everything under the sun and are flailing. We have other churches that have little more than a piano, a hymnal, and a Bible for worship, and no programs to speak of, and though small, they're vital. The same can be said for cultural relevance or politics. You can find churches right out of the 19th century, or churches far more progressive than ours, and they're thriving. Others, whether conservative or progressive, are struggling and would love to have our problems. Neither political affiliation nor cultural relevance can guarantee health and vitality. As important as it is, even being friendly is not enough. Most churches believe they're friendly, and compared to our detached and lonely culture, most probably are. But even friendliness is not enough to become a vital, healthy, growing congregation. Now, I'm not saying these things aren't important. They are. This is why our session and our staff give much thought and intention to our worship, our ministries, and our identity. My point is simply, these things will not guarantee our becoming a vital, healthy, growing congregation. They are not the keys. They are not the difference makers. They are not the game changers. So if a charismatic pastor, a popular style of worship, a plethora of programs, finding the sweet spot on political or cultural issues, or becoming the friendliest church in town, if these are not the answers, what is? Hospitality. Christian community is about relationship. And hospitality is the key. Christian hospitality begins with friendship. Welcoming the stranger in the narthex, visiting with a friend at coffee hour, bringing bread to a first-time visitor. But Christian hospitality is much greater than being friendly. Christian hospitality changes lives. A friendly church welcomes children and families. They have family-friendly programs. They create a safe and welcoming space for children. An hospitable church has members who create space in their lives. Even if they don't have children, they come to a block party. They teach in the Sunday school. They get to know personally our children and their families. We have some great, hospitable people in our children's ministries. They know their ministry is life-changing. But the key to our growth is not in the programs, the activities, or the volunteers. These are all important. But the key is hospitality. Going beyond the programs. Being present. Taking an interest in the children and their parents. Asking about school. Creating a place for them in our lives. Building relationships. Friends, this is true for every ministry in our church. Mission trips aren't about the houses we build. They're about the relationships we create. Singing in the choir isn't about the music. Bible study isn't about the revelation. Congregational dinners aren't about the food. Sorry, Carol. As good as all these things are, we do them to build relationships, to create community. The Christian life isn't about enjoying our personal blessings. No, we are blessed by the Christian life to be a blessing to others. It's about relationship. Friends, life can be hard. Jesus knows this as well as anyone. He may not have dealt with some of the modern challenges we face. Life looked different in his day. But he understood human sorrow and joy. He understood hunger and what it means to be fed. He understood sickness and health, loneliness and friendship, living on the fringe and sharing life with others. This morning we hear Jesus has just learned of the death of his cousin and friend, John the Baptist. Needing some time alone to grieve and pray, Jesus set off in a boat to a deserted place. But the needs of the crowd were great. Maybe they didn't know why Jesus left them. Maybe they hadn't heard about John's death. Or maybe they were just consumed by their own lives and couldn't see that Jesus was suffering. Whatever prompted them, when the crowds heard where Jesus had gone, they followed him. When Jesus saw them, as the psalmist says, deep called to deep. Jesus wasn't angry or frustrated. Oh, why can't you give me a moment of peace? No, suffering called to suffering. Jesus had compassion on them and healed all who were sick. Later, as dinner time approached, the disciples discovered no one had brought food and they had little to offer. Maybe they had seen the crowd and had compassion. Oh, these folks must be starving. Maybe they just wanted to go and get something to eat themselves. Maybe they were tired after a long day of ministry and just wanted to go home. Whatever their motivation, the disciples told Jesus to send the crowd away so they could eat. Jesus said to them, "They don't need to leave. You feed them." Mortified, the disciples proclaimed, "We have nothing to offer but 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus said, "Bring them to me." There's been much speculation on what happens next. As we said to the children, some see a miracle of multiplication. If God can create the world out of nothing, Jesus can certainly feed a crowd on a few loaves and fish. Some see in the taking, blessing, and breaking of the loaves and fish a foreshadowing of the Lord's Supper where all are spiritually fed. Some, in the spirit of stone soup, see the miracle of changed hearts. where the people discover they have much more to offer than they realize. Some children of the Enlightenment refuse to entertain any of these possibilities. Friends, Jesus' miracles have long posed a challenge to me. I can't check my reason at the door when it comes to matters of faith. I'm forever asking questions. If Jesus healed this person, why won't Jesus heal the one I love? If Jesus fed 5,000, why are there millions of hungry children today? Jesus performed so many miracles. Where are these miracles today? Now, I'm in a better place than I was, but not sure I've found many answers. Though I do appreciate Willa Cather's perspective. In her book, Death Comes for the Archbishop, she writes, The miracles of the church seem to me to rest not so much upon faces or voices or healing power coming suddenly near to us from afar off, but upon our perceptions being made finer, so that for a moment our eyes can see and our ears can hear what is there about us always. Miracles aren't what they seem. A hungry person is fed, a blind person sees, a lame person walks, a sick person is healed, and we see the extraordinary. But these extraordinary events are not the miracles. They are but signs pointing to the miracle. The miracle is the changed life, the new relationship. The miracle is this person, once in need of healing or feeding or wholeness, now has a new relationship with God. Her life has been forever changed by God's love. She has been blessed to see and hear and touch and taste in a new way, which has been with her always. The very presence of God. We look at the feeding of the 5,000 and we think, wow, did you see that? Jesus fed 5,000 people with a few loaves and fish. And after everyone had eaten their fill, there were 12 baskets of food left. But the real miracle was Jesus told his 12 disciples who had nothing to offer but a couple loaves and fish. Jesus told his disciples, "You feed them." And they did. Friends, the disciples gave to Jesus what little they had to offer. And they fed 5,000 people by a deserted lake shore. The disciples gave to Jesus what little they had to offer, and it changed their lives. They were blessed to become a blessing to others. But the miracle was not that they had fed over 5,000 people with a few loaves and fish. The miracle was they listened to Jesus' call. You feed them. They listened to Jesus' call and they gave of themselves in ways they never thought possible. Sisters and brothers, this is the hospitality that changes lives. This is the hospitality that creates vital communities of faith, even in a declining denomination. This is the hospitality that inspires us to become the people Christ calls us to be and empowers us to love as Christ loves. Beloved, as we approach Christ's table this morning, we will be blessed to share in the very body and blood of Jesus Christ, that we might become the very body and blood of Jesus Christ in the world. Another miracle I can't explain. As we share this blessing together, let us offer in return whatever meager provisions we have brought. Let us not be held back by our doubts. Let us not be intimidated by our weakness. Let us not be overwhelmed by the vast needs of those around us. Let us simply listen to Christ's invitation. You feed them. And let us trust we have been blessed to do just that. Thanks be to God.